are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, February 13th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, climatologist from Pennsylvania State University, author of The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars and The Madhouse Effect, and the 2019 recipient of the Tyler Prize, Michael Mann will be here to discuss why is it so cold if there's actually climate change. Meanwhile, the Senate passes a massive public land protection bill. Sort of shocking. And on the recession watch, a record 7 million Americans are behind in their car payments. Not good. Meanwhile, a hedge fund's real estate play will destroy local news. And the War Powers Resolution to end our Yemen war support is gaining steam. Republicans realize they may have messed up on that whole health care thing. And Mitch McConnell will force a vote on the Green New Deal resolution in the Senate. Meanwhile, California Governor Gavin Newsom seems legit. Now the question is, can he execute? And back on the Hill, the Attorney General nominee William Barr advances. El Chapo, meanwhile, found guilty. No word who's going to get their Patreon account. I'm sorry.
I don't know how Bruce is going to do.
And as a single tear slides down Howard Schultz's face, a new HuffPost poll says only 10% of the country think the parties are too extreme. All this and more on today's Majority Report, ladies and gentlemen. Folks, it is Wednesday. I should tell you that Brendan is on the board today. So
if you're wondering why it sounds so good.
If you're wondering why we've had a little upgrade in the audio mixing department, now you know. Now it's not a mystery. There it is. Matt is on a personal, he's having a personal day. I can only imagine what that is like. Well, no, I can't. I mean, I can imagine what it's like. It's video games and
bomb
whatnot.
Water sound effect. Sorry.
Oh, also today I should tell you that in the fun half, we're anticipating a phone call from a listener. We'll just use his first initial A. I was holding the line for nearly an hour today. This was yesterday. And you guys didn't take my call. I think you guys are scared of people with actual strong arguments to challenge your narrative. If you want to prove this notion wrong, then take my call next time. Well, I hope you call in today. We have your area code.
That could be about so many things.
It could, but that's the thing. It's completely, oh, I have no idea where that, but, and I do appreciate the acknowledgement that we have a narrative, and so that's good. But also you should know that in our fun half, when we take calls, we have somewhere between 10 and 30 callers on the line on any given day, and we just simply can't get to all of them.
Particularly not ones that are going to disrupt our narrative.
Right. No, actually, no. That is a brilliant way to jump the line is to send us an email and say, I want to disrupt your narrative and give us your
okay.
area code. And then that you will see that we will. Just a reminder, too. Big corporations are getting rich from selling your data. Congress has completely failed to save net neutrality or protect your privacy online. Now, internet providers and mobile carriers like Comcast and Verizon are free to restrict websites, spy on your online activity, or sell your browsing history to advertisers. But with one click, ExpressVPN shields your online activity from internet and mobile providers. ExpressVPN has easy-to-use apps that run seamlessly in the background of your computer or your phone or your tablet. ExpressVPN secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data and holding your public IP address. And hiding, I should say. Get ExpressVPN protection for less than $7 a month. You can get up to all sorts of mischief with this. ExpressVPN is rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar. It comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Look, if you ever use public Wi-Fi and want to keep hackers and spies from seeing your data, ExpressVPN is the solution. I will not go on a public Wi-Fi system at all, particularly because when I'm traveling with my computer, I have sensitive stuff on the computer, not government secrets, I haven't taken a series of
snuff
nudies,
films.
Of snuff films or anything like that. But I have, you know, I have saved bank account statements. I have maybe a picture of my license that I had to send somebody. Maybe someone can divine some things like, I don't know, my, you know, first pet's maiden name or something that... would allow them to hack into some of
the... made it.
Yeah, I'm just using... But the point is, using a VPN and using ExpressVPN gives you protection, particularly in that context. The smart thing to do would be to use it all the time. To take back your internet privacy today, find out how you can get 3 months free. Go to expressvpn.com/majority. That's ExpressVPN, expressvpn.com/majority for 3 months free with a 1 year package. Visit expressvpn.com/majority to learn more. If you don't know about VPNs, check it out. All right, we're going to have Michael Mann on in a moment. I don't want to say celebration, in honor of him coming on. You know, Michael Mann has been at this for two decades now in terms of engaging in the political fight, often to great expense to him, frankly, in grief. And we will talk a little bit about that. And he just wrote the other day, probably the millionth column he's had to write, about how when it's cold in the winter for a couple of days, that is not evidence that global warming is not happening. There is a difference between weather and climate. So in honor of that, we went into the Wayback Machine and found a time where I was significantly younger. This was 9 years ago. Almost 9 years ago to the day.
I was just out of college with an ex-girlfriend going, where's Keith?
Exactly. It was December, I think, of 2010, maybe. And... I was hosting, filling in for Olbermann, and we did this little bit on a day where we had gotten snow, and it was quite obvious that Rush Limbaugh et al. Would be talking about how there was no more climate change. Little did I know 9 years ago that we would have a president who does exactly the same thing as we were accusing some of these other dummies from doing.
But first, we wanted to explain the technical meteorological reasons that storms like this fuel global warming denial. For that report, let's go to our countdown meteorologist, Sam Cedar. Sam? Thanks, Sam. Now, this is Sunday's storm right over the Northeast, dropping more than 2 feet of snow in some regions. But then we got a high pressure system coming in from the energy producing states, specifically lobbying pressure that emanates from companies that stand to lose money if we actually go green. This effect is known as the Koch brothers, sometimes referred to as Los Hermanos. Now, combine that with a strong front of ignorance sweeping up from down south. And keep in mind, on their best day, you're looking at 60, 65% stupidity levels down there. And that gives you a strong chance of thunder and prevarication. And it just sits right on top here and hangs there. And of course, you get that current of blustery hot air out of just one radio studio in Palm Beach, Florida. And that gust actually controls an entire stream of Republican lawmakers leading all the way up to Washington, D.C. and creating an entire system spinning counterfact-wise. Keep in mind, with the chilling factor on the mainstream media, it's going to feel several degrees stupider than it already is. So please, folks, bundle up. Back to you, Sam. Countdown meteorologist Sam Cedar, thanks for that report, Sam.
I'm also seeing some type of, like, old Steve Carell vehicle here. It's like he's the main anchor, but he's also the weatherman.
Right, you got to run.
It's the same guy.
You got to run right over there during that thing.
Did you tell them you were going to do that?
Did I tell them that I was going to do
bust
that?
I don't know.
No, I just brought my own weather map. And no, of course.
I'm impressed that they let you do that. That's all.
They helped me write it.
Oh, well, that's great. Good
was
for
not
them.
Even, they wrote most of it, I would think.
Arne Melber wishes he could do this at the 6
o'clock. It was a little bit different. It was a little bit different era towards the, you know, in those first couple years of the Bush, the Obama administration. But there it is. And sadly, not much has changed in terms of this debate. So the only difference, let me rephrase that. There is, to a large extent, I think folks on the left have moved past that the denial and are just trying to push it through. And it's interesting that Mitch McConnell is going to force this vote in the Senate because it's quite possible that the Democrats will not be as afraid of this as he anticipates. There are a lot of elements that are very progressive and seemingly outside of the purview of of simply fighting climate change within the Green New Deal. But that's going to be... it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. Probably not in the way that McConnell hopes. Meanwhile, speaking of health, I've been on this kick for some time. One of the most important things we do for our health every day is brushing our teeth. Yet most of us don't do it properly. It took me years to find this out. Quip is a better electric toothbrush created by dentists and designers. Quip was designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, affordable, and even enjoyable. With sensitive sonic vibrations, it's gentle on your sensitive gums, and the built-in two-minute timer pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides and guide you to a full and even clean. Better yet, Quip doesn't require a clunky charger. This is my favorite part about the Quip. It runs for 3 months on one charge. And it comes with a multi-use cover that mounts to your mirror for a less cluttered sink space. No wonder Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association. Look, the difference between the different cleaning mechanisms of an electric toothbrush are virtually irrelevant. The key is to use it all the time. And the beauty about the Quip is it is basically the size of a normal toothbrush. And so you can travel with it. You can have it on your sink and you have to bring it to the charger. Or you don't have to have a whole like plug-in type of situation going on your sink. And it's also extremely stylish.
It's a little thing called functionality.
And look, I'm not going to get into it too much, but the point is you that whole thing where you go like this, it's not the way you do it. You angle down. Once you start getting like the deep cleaning for the periodontal stuff, like you do at my
when
age,
you brush
believe
properly,
me,
you will never go back.
Believe me. You're going to want to take care of your teeth, and now's the time to do it. And that's why I love Quip, and that's why they're backed by over 20,000 dental professionals. Quip starts at just $25. If you go to getquip.com/majority right now, you get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush every 3 months. They send you new toothpaste and new brush head because you're supposed to change them every 3 months, folks, but you didn't know that. You get your first refill pack free at getquip.com/majority, getquip.com/majority. And also, for those of you who suffer from heartburn or acid reflux, keeps you up at night, MedCline is a new natural solution to a problem that affects thousands of Americans. MedCline is a comfortable acid reflux pillow system for your bed that keeps you in the best sleeping position for natural relief. A lot of people try and do this by just propping up pillows, whatnot. You don't have to do that. No more sliding down a wedge. No more putting blocks onto your bed frame. No more dangerous medication. No more suffering. The MedCline system is available in three sizes. It has a patented arm pocket, so you can sleep comfortably on your side without pressure on your shoulder. The soft, supportive body pillow keeps you from rolling on your back so you can get the rest you deserve. If you're suffering with nighttime heartburn, you have to give MedCline a try tonight. With their 100-day guarantee, relief guarantee, you have nothing to lose. The system ships free with this special offer and comes complete with a full set of pillowcases. For more information, visit goodnightheartburn.com or call 800-610-1607. Enter the code MAJORITY at checkout for fast, free shipping. That's goodnightheartburn.com or call 800-610-1607. That's 610-1607 to learn more and try MedCline today. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to the great Michael Mann.
State to help glass billy bends before it cracks, embedded down into our path.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program climatologist from Penn State University, author of The Hockey Stick and Climate Wars and The Madhouse Effect is his most recent. He's also the 2019 Tyler Prize for Environmental Achievement Award winner, Michael Mann. Michael, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Sam. Always great to talk with you.
Congrats on this Tyler Prize. I got to be honest with you. I had not heard of the Tyler Prize before, but as I read up on it, this thing is like winning like the Nobel Prize for environmental. For environmental protection, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, they bill it as sort of the Nobel Prize for Environmental Science, and I am, truly honored and humbled to receive the award. But the real honor for me was that I shared the award this year with a personal hero of mine, Warren Washington, who is one of the first scientists decades ago to develop the sorts of climate models that we now use, frequently to look at future projections of climate change, to answer all sorts of questions about human-caused climate change. And Warren Washington was really at the very forefront of that, the whole development of that science. He's also the second African-American recipient of a PhD in the country in atmospheric science. And so he's a real hero of mine, and it was an honor to share the prize with him this year.
Okay, well, let's talk about the some of the reasons why you got that award and sort of the work, you know, as I read into I think I've interviewed you at least multiple times, and yeah. I did not realize how long you have been under assault, and I know this came up during the hockey stick and the climate wars, but maybe I just forgot about it. But there has been like a full frontal attack on you for an extended period of time, like 20 years, it feels like.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes I like to think maybe they picked on the wrong guy. I think the intent was to get me to shut up, to get me to back off, to get me to disappear from sort of the public space. And it's a result of this, iconic graph that my co-authors and I published literally two decades ago, the so-called hockey stick graph that shows how unprecedented recent warming is. It shows it's unprecedented as far back as we can go, which was 1,000 years at that time. And it became sort of an icon in the climate change debate, and it became a lightning rod for sort of industry-funded climate change deniers, fossil fuel lobbyists, and front groups whose sole, you know, aim is to try to discredit the science of human-caused climate change because it represents an obvious threat to their bottom line. It means we can't continue to burn fossil fuels. And of course, the fossil fuel industry benefits from our continued addiction to fossil fuels. So, you know, they decided that they had to try to bring down the scientific evidence for climate change. And the easy way to do that was to go after one iconic curve and one, you know, what they assumed was a vulnerable young scientist. I was just a postdoctoral researcher at the time. But I chose to fight back and ultimately not just to defend my research and to defend the science of climate change, but because there's such larger stakes here. We really are talking about the future of the planet for our children and grandchildren.
So there was lawsuits as they were attempting to get your
right.
emails, and largely it strikes me as it was just simply a way to keep you busy on some level.
Vexatious lawsuits, putting me in the hot seat at congressional hearings. I was vilified in the, by Fox News, the Wall Street Journal, and the right-wing media. There were pressure groups that tried to get me fired from my job. I was at the receiving end of death threats and threats against my family. So, I've pretty much seen it all at this point.
Well, so let me ask you this, because, I just played a clip that had occurred to me as I was reading a piece you wrote about the big freeze. We just had that huge, almost 3/4 of the nation was subject to super cold temperatures. And so I read your piece on it. It reminded me of something that I did when I filled in with Olbermann about 8 years ago, which was basically just talking about whenever you get this type of cold weather or snow, you start getting this idiocy, forgive my bluntness, about...
I think you're being kind.
Well, that assumes actually like good intent, I guess, right. on some level. But this attempt to say that, this proves there's no climate change. I want you to address that specific claim in a minute, but has things, what has changed, from 10 years ago in terms of A, our collective awareness and assessment of the problem, and B, the political will to actually do something about it?
Yeah, great question. I think there are a couple of threads that are coming together, favorable threads in sort of a perfect storm, if you'll forgive the expression, of potential for climate action. And one of those is just the fact that people are seeing the impacts of climate change firsthand now. They're no longer subtle. We see them play out in real time on our television screens and our newspaper headlines, unprecedented superstorms, heat waves, droughts, floods, wildfires. Everything we saw play out last summer, writ large, around the entire northern hemisphere, and meanwhile, the summer in the southern hemisphere, Australia's experiencing the worst heat that they've ever had and unprecedented floods. That is the face now of climate change, and people are getting it. And scientists like myself are doing our best to connect the dots for the people, for the media, for the public, for our elected representatives, our policymakers. And I think people are connecting the dots. I think it's grown extremely difficult for climate change deniers to deny that something is happening, much as, despite the fact that they continue to try. And Donald Trump in his Twitter feed, of course, continues to be a purveyor of sort of climate change denial talking points and myths. But I think the people get it. And so we understand climate change isn't this distant, far-off threat. It's about people losing their lives in unprecedented superstorms, Maria and Puerto Rico, the California wildfires. And something else is happening, Sam, and I think you probably you know, have a sense of this as well. It's sort of the way young folks are reasserting themselves in our public discourse, in our social discourse, in our political dialogue. We're hearing the voice of younger people weigh in on the matters that are important to them, whether it be gun control or now climate change. And you've got these kids around the world now who are engaging these school strikes to draw attention to climate change, and they just speak with such clarity and moral authority that only the most hardened cynic cannot be willing to listen to what they're saying. And I think that's a game changer. I think it's changing the conversation. I think all these things are coming together. And of course, with Democrats now taking back the House of Representatives, there's an opportunity now politically for us to actually see climate legislation. It may not be able to pass the Senate now, who knows, 2 years from now, but we're going to see the groundwork laid now by Democrats in the House and maybe some Republicans who are willing to work with them to get climate change back on the political agenda.
I think we could definitely track the center of the Republican Party for a second. And the reason why I focus so much on the Republican Party in this is that I think they're the only major political party in the world that denies, that has a climate change denial as like a campaign plank and
part of their platform. Yeah, absolutely.
It seems that they have moved at least from total denial of it as a phenomena, but are, you know, still sort of dancing around with the idea that it's not man-made. And then to the extent that it is, there's nothing we can do about it.
Right. The only consistency in the various arguments that they put forward is that they're an excuse for inaction, right? There's otherwise no intellectual consistency. You know, it's either it's not happening to it's happening, but it's not us. All right, maybe it's us, but it's happened, but it's not bad. And then finally, sort of the ultimate stage in our book, The Madhouse Effect, Tom Tolles, Washington Post cartoonist, has a beautiful cartoon. We talk about the ladder of climate change denial as they sort of go down the rungs from it's not happening to it's happening, but it's not us. And eventually you get to, well, you know what? There's nothing we can do about it. And that's not true either.
All right. Well, let's talk about, let's talk just a little bit about some of the problem. Then we'll move on to what we can do about it, because there is a, like you say, the youth ultimately and is starting to bring, you know, sort of suggestions to the fore. But I just want to talk about two things. One, let's talk about the polar. I'm not sure what you call it, but we had 3/4 of the country with temperatures that were either at records or near record lows. For a couple of days, it was bizarre. And then within like 2 days in New York, it was 60 degrees, which is also a strange thing to experience in the middle of February.
Yeah, right. We got weather whiplash, right? Extremes on both sides. And here's the thing. It felt like record cold to us. I think you and I are probably of similar sort of vintage. You know, I grew up, I remember these really cold, snowy winters in the early 70s in New England where I grew up.
Blizzard of 78. I was out of school for 3 weeks.
I think. And, you know, of course, when I was a little kid, I mean, the snow would come up to my, you know, to my head. And part of that is just I was shorter. But no, we had these really cold, snowy winters. You know, I call that old fashioned cold, old fashioned only in the sense that you have to go back to our youth to see it. And, you know, millennials and folks who are younger than that just haven't seen it. They've grown up in a world that just did not see those sorts of old-fashioned winters. So then when you're confronted with something like this cold air outbreak, the Arctic, polar vortex breakdown, and these very cold conditions we saw a few weeks ago, it feels like it's unprecedented cold only because it's unprecedented in a few decades.
Right.
That's how profound climate change is. That sort of cold has become so rare that we think it's record cold when in fact it is. And Donald Trump, of course, exploited that by claiming we were breaking cold records. Here's the thing. That week, there were actually two locations in the world, both of them, I think in Minnesota or Wisconsin, two small towns, or no, maybe Illinois, there were two towns that set all-time lows. In the entire world, there were two towns that actually set all-time lows. Chicago, none of the major cities did. And in that same month, the first month of this year, when we saw those two record lows, we saw 35 record highs, right, elsewhere in the world, where, you know, the Southern Hemisphere, Australia, South America, baking through a record warm summer for them. And so, no, we're not seeing an increase in record cold. We're just seeing some of this old-fashioned cold. And here's the kicker. There may even be a climate change connection there, as you know, because one of the things we're increasingly convinced that the fact that the Arctic is warming faster than the rest of the planet is actually because it decreases the contrast in how cold it gets when you go from the equator to the polar regions. It's that temperature contrast that drives the jet stream and the polar vortex. So when you warm the Arctic more than the rest of the planet, you actually slow down this jet stream and you slow down the polar vortex, and you allow for these sort of polar vortex breakdown events where the cold air that's normally bottled up in the Arctic can escape down into, you know, the United States or Europe, which is what we're seeing. It's not giving us record cold, but it's giving us some of that old-fashioned cold.
How much like new dynamics do we find as time goes on? In other words, like everything else, I guess. I mean, it was just a report that a couple of days ago that we are headed to a mass extinction of insects. For the most part, a couple are doing better because of what's going on, and that it's not all a function of climate change. Climate change seems to be one factor. Another factor seems to be these new forms of pesticides and herbicides. But you see, but we're talking about we don't. It's very hard to predict, right? Like if the number of a certain type of grasshopper drops below a certain critical mass, we don't necessarily know all the potential implications for our ecospheres and whatnot.
That's right.
And I imagine it's the same thing with climate change. How many new sort of dynamics are we observing? You know, because it seems like every six months we're like, wow, the rate of the warming of the oceans is actually goes beyond what our models predicted. How many of those sort of crop up along the way?
Yeah, and, you know, with the ecosystems, animal populations and plants, we say that these relationships are nonlinear. It means that there's a very complex interrelationship between the different sort of species in our ecosystem, and that makes it very difficult to predict. When you lose one species, it can have reverberations through the entire ecosystem, through the entire food chain. And so that's a real worry, that we can have these impacts now, global scale impacts on our environment, where, you know, the potential implications are extremely difficult to predict accurately, even with our best models. And so, you know, the lesson there is that uncertainty is not our friend. You often hear uncertainty cited by the critics as if it's reason for inaction. Oh, well, there's uncertainty in the science. Well, if anything, as we learn more, and as you're alluding to, as we learn more about the science, we're finding that the uncertainty is sort of not breaking in our favor. It's breaking against us. We're finding that things can happen faster, and there are things that can happen that we didn't envision happening. And we're seeing that with the melting of the ice sheets, which is happening faster than we expected, meaning that it's contributing to sea level rise faster than we expected. And that has to do with some of the physics of ice sheets behavior that just wasn't in our previous models. And when you put them into the models, suddenly you find that, hey, you know, the West Antarctic ice sheet can collapse much more quickly than we thought. And that can lead to sea level rise much more quickly than we thought. And that's true, for example, for the relationship between climate change and extreme weather. And some of my own research deals with that connection. And we're finding that there's some subtle ways that, you know, we just alluded to. If you change temperatures, you can change the jet stream. You can change the jet stream in a way where you get these very large weather systems that remain stuck in place, like we saw last summer with this, you know, very hot air drought, high pressure over California, giving them unprecedented wildfire, where back east we had an unprecedented sort of low pressure system, which gave us the wettest summer on record. And so, you know, that's difficult to predict. The models didn't see that coming. These changes in the behavior of the jet stream may be leading to even more extreme persistent weather events than our models were able to predict, you know, just a few years ago.
Let's pivot towards solutions. But one before we get there, there was just a report that came out from NASA, which I imagine you might be aware of. But the Jet Propulsion Laboratory confirmed that the oil and gas industry is responsible for the largest share of the world's rising methane emissions. I guess this was somewhat of a mystery. And I'm not quite sure how NASA necessarily goes about determining that. But, NASA is one of those outfits apparently that gets paid regardless of what they find out about methane leaks. They're not necessarily – it's not necessarily a motivated finding. What is the low-hanging fruit? Is there a low-hanging fruit when we start to talk about solutions – or at least mitigation of the impact of climate change? Because it feels like there is, all the fruit seems to be, frankly, fairly high up the tree, and we're going to have to do something drastic.
Yeah, so, and I'm glad you mentioned NASA because, you talk about it. What's an unimpeachable source of scientific information in our nation still? That people, even the most hardened contrarians and conservatives tend to respect, the space program and NASA, and it's played this amazingly important role in the history of science and technology in this country. And so people listen when NASA says something in a way that they might not listen to other sources. And NASA just, doesn't have an agenda. They're just looking at the numbers. They are able to make interesting measurements because they use what's known as remote sensing, satellite-based observations. And this has become increasingly important in observing the Earth system. So you can use these satellite observations to actually look at, emissions of carbon. And so that's the connection here that, even NASA is saying that, hey, we're seeing an uptick in these methane levels. We think that's coming from natural gas. Fracking, hydraulic fracturing. When you try to get at that natural gas, they inject fluids into the bedrock that breaks it up, and some of that gas escapes through holes in the surface. And we call it fugitive methane emissions, like it's trying to escape. Well, that's what it's doing. And the methane escapes into the atmosphere, and it's a very potent greenhouse gas, so that's adding to the warming. So we think that natural gas, the advocates used to say, well, you produce less CO2 when you burn natural gas for power versus coal. And that's true, but you also some of that natural gas escapes into the atmosphere. Some of that methane escapes into the atmosphere. So low-hanging fruit, well, some of it is just common sense regulations to make sure that, natural gas recovery is done in a way that attempts to prevent the release of methane. And under the Obama administration, we had executive policies. The EPA had policies now to try to limit those methane emissions from natural gas. Of course, one of the first things that the Trump administration did was to try to eliminate those basic protections. So the low-hanging fruit, the easiest thing is keep the protections that were already in place there. And we have an administration right now that's trying to undo all of the environmental protections of the last half century. But on top of that, there are a lot of things that we can do in our everyday lives that save us money. They make us feel better. They're healthier, and they reduce our carbon emissions. Bicycling rather than driving, using more fuel-efficient vehicles or public transportation, or more efficient appliances, changing your diet in a way that's carbon-friendly. There's so many things that we can do that are good for us, and they reduce our carbon emissions. That's the low-hanging fruit. We call it no regrets. Hey, it has a negative cost. It's a benefit just to do it, and we ought to be doing it anyways. But to get the sorts of carbon emission reductions we need to avert catastrophic warming, we're going to have to, go further than that. That's going to require that there be a price on carbon that we've got and incentives for renewable energy. We've got to level the playing field so that forms of energy that aren't destroying the planet, renewable energy, can compete fairly against fossil fuel energy, which currently, under the current administration is getting all sorts of subsidies. It's interesting that conservatives often complain about, the government picking winners and losers. They did that when the Obama administration administration was trying to push us in the direction we need to go with renewable energy. Well, here we've got the Trump administration trying to prop up the failing coal industry.
Well, I mean, look, from my perspective, there's no such thing as a government that does not pick winners and losers. It's really just right. I mean, that's just the nature of society, frankly. And
right.
the question is
right.
just like who's going to decide who those winners and losers are and what's that decision
right.
going to be? And the personal responsibility part of it aside, that's not, you know, I think that's going to make people feel good. But at the end of the day, we need a robust government, societal and frankly, international, response to this. And
absolutely.
And leveling the playing field, I'm not even sure will get us there either. Right. I mean, we need to sort of aggressively in the same way that we said, let's build an interstate highway system. Let's subsidize corn so that we can basically set up factory farms, as we did 40, 50 years ago.
Right.
We need to have or for that matter, our response to World War II. You know,
yeah, let's mobilization.
Yeah, let's convert
nationwide
our
mobilization.
Yeah, let's convert
yep.
our capacity to build weapons. Obviously, I'm not advocating a war of that sort, but metaphorically speaking,
yeah.
you know, we did that. We made a massive shift in the entire economy
right.
in the matter of months.
That's
it feels
right.
like we need to do that.
Well, that's the impetus behind the now well-known Green New Deal, right? That AOC is favoring along with some of her co-sponsors and supporters in the Senate, Ed Markey of Massachusetts, and a number of others. You know, that is the principle at work here. We need the equivalent of an Apollo project focused on transitioning our energy system away from fossil fuels to renewable energy. And so you're absolutely right. I would say that those mechanisms aren't incompatible. If we put a price on carbon, if we introduce explicit incentives for renewable energy, we're going to accelerate this natural transition that's already taking place. I mean, solar and wind, soon enough, just left to their own accord, are going to become cheaper, more efficient than renewable energy. It's inevitable. What we need to do is speed up that transition so it's fast enough to avert catastrophic warming of the planet. And to do that, there are market mechanisms that you can, use to do that. And that's the incentive, subsidies for renewable energy or a price on carbon. That's where that comes in. But then there are all these other things that you can do to try to help transition, society along in the direction we need to go. And so it requires a major mobilization. And I think that the Green New Deal, whether or not, something that looks like it gets passed, it's a wonderful starting point. And it gets climate change right at the center of our agenda going into this next legislative term.
What from a policy perspective, I mean, and this may be somewhat outside your portfolio, right? I mean, you can tell us it's going to rain, but you're not necessarily choosing which umbrella, I guess, right? Like, I mean,
I can't even tell you if it's going to rain.
Well,
no,
but I'm saying just you're indicating that we have a problem. The solution,
yep.
it seems like, is once you get past the amount of carbon that needs to be prevented from entering the atmosphere, how you go about
yep.
that is, it seems to me, or from your perspective, is it strictly a political decision? Like, are there?
Yeah.
Like, do we? It seems to me we have like a fairly wide array of technical or technological responses.
Yep.
to this a problem. It's just a political decision as to which one we choose.
Exactly. I mean, we have the technology necessary to solve this problem. But, we don't need a miracle, as people like Bill Gates like to say. We don't need a miracle. The miracle's already happened. It's called renewable energy. It's wind. It's solar. It's everything else. We've got the technology to do this. It's simply a matter of how much incentives we provide to move us in that direction and to scale that up rapidly. And so that's a matter for legitimate political debate. You know, how do you do it? Do you do it with explicit subsidies for renewable energy? Do you do it with a price on carbon, or both of those things? And if it's a price on carbon, is it tradable emissions, you know, cap and trade, or is it a carbon tax? And if it's a carbon tax, is it a revenue neutral carbon tax that some conservatives have actually gotten behind? That's a worthy political debate to have. That's the debate we ought to have been having. We should have been having, you know, over the last 2 years when Republicans controlled the House of Representatives, and we haven't been having that. I think that is the discussion we're having now. And there have already been a couple hearings, one that happened today in the House of Representatives on climate change and climate policy. And the tenor of the discussion, it's refreshing. It's so different from, you know, when I testified back in 2017 to Lamar Smith, the House Science Committee chair. He held a hearing to try to discredit the science of climate change. And he's the chair of the House Science Committee. Today, we've got a House Science Committee in the House of Representatives that is pro-science. And that wants to have the meaningful conversation that we're talking about here. So I think we're going to see that happen over the next couple of years. Again, we might not be at a point where we can see legislation pass the Senate, but, you know, with some small changes in the makeup of the Senate, we could potentially see an environment where we could actually have climate legislation emerge out of Congress in the relatively near future. I don't think we can rule that out.
This may be a sort of a silly question to ask, and one maybe that you can't answer, but I know that there is sort of a broad consensus in the scientific community, at least that is, I guess, related to lay people, about how little time we have to act on this.
Yeah.
When you're sitting around at these conferences, or when you go to a conference, or when you're with your colleagues, are you guys basically throwing out another number that is actually worse? I mean, does it get, you know, how dark does it get when you talk to your colleagues?
Yeah, you know, no, I would say that we're pretty good. If you look at the National Climate Assessment report that was put out this fall, which the Trump administration tried to bury on Black Friday, and it ended up commanding even more attention for it, ironically, that report.
We should say, just so that people know what this report is, that's like what, almost a dozen U.S. government agencies that obviously they're not making their boss happy. They are tasked with putting out this information. And so that's a broad assessment of the U.S. government.
Right. And the president is congressionally required to put out the report. And so they try to put it out on the day they thought it would help bury it. And that didn't happen. And I think because the message was so clear. And the IPCC report, the special report about what it would take to limit warming below dangerous levels of 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2 degrees Celsius. That's 3.5 Fahrenheit warming of the planet. And a pretty sobering report. And it actually is the basis of this talking point, sort of assertion that we've heard a lot about lately, and including AOC made this statement that we only have 12 years left before basically we commit ourselves to disastrous climate change, and it's true. So that's a pretty alarming talking point, right? That's a pretty alarming statement. And it you know, even though it sort of came out of the mouth of AOC, and she was vilified by her conservative critics for it, it turns out that that's essentially what the IPCC said. They said we've got 12 years in order to bring our carbon emissions down rapidly enough to avoid crossing those dangerous thresholds of 2 degrees Celsius, 3.5 Fahrenheit warming of the planet, where we see the worst impacts of climate change. So, no, I don't think the scientists are holding back. And if you read the National Climate Assessment report, it really uses some pretty striking language in describing the devastating impact, not that climate change will have in the future, that climate change is having already.
Right.
So I don't think the scientific community in general is holding back. What is happening is there's still some inability for us to get our message out through the mainstream media.
And we should say there's no going backwards, right? There's no we hit a certain temperature and then, oh, we get smart enough about this and we can go backwards.
Once we start to melt the great ice sheets, the Greenland ice sheet and the West Antarctic ice sheet, there's no going back. We could try to dial the CO2 back down, dial the warming back down. That doesn't stop. That continues. And so that's what's so terrifying, frankly, about the prospect of climate inaction is that we commit to long-term changes that are irreversible on human timescales, on societal timescales, in a matter of years now if we don't act.
Right. That is one of, like, I guess, the key flaws in human imagination is that we're making decisions. We made decisions 20 years ago that sort of sealed the deal for at least certain problems that we have now.
That's right.
And
that's right.
We don't necessarily have the ability. It takes a certain amount of, I guess, maturity on some level to sort of view the future. But
right. Not what we have in the White House right now.
No, not even close. Michael Mann, congratulations again on the on the Tyler Prize, and thank you so much for joining us. We will put links to your books at majorityreportradio.com. Thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Sam. Always a pleasure.
All right, folks. Boy. I mean, on some level, it's like the teeth brushing. You don't brush your teeth today, you're in your 20s or your 30s. Guys, you're not going to realize you made a bad mistake for about 20 years. And then you can't go backwards. You can't go backwards.
Jeez. These are always so depressing. I mean, I'm not going to say the whole thing of what I think about the policy prescriptions in the interview. I would only urge people to go to wearemany.org. and click on the environment tag if you want to hear some lectures from Marxists on the issue of climate change.
Nevertheless, whatever those policy prescriptions ultimately end up being, it's going to take an awareness and an acceptance by our political class.
You know what my honest response to that interview is? I don't buy the climate scam. Totally a lie. And I'm going to go enjoy myself.
It's definitely worth reading both The Hockey Stick and Climate Wars and The Madhouse Effect. He has been literally under siege for decades, trying to get the word out. And he's one of the few scientists. There's some, but, you know, scientists are not... it's very difficult for scientists to compete with tens of millions of dollars of public relations disinformation that is put out. I mean, this is the same dynamic that we had with tobacco for a long time in this country. All right, I'm going to take a break, head into the fun half of the program. The number is 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number. Wherein we will take your calls. A, if you're out there listening, call in now.
I will narrative disrupting crap on my Thursday. Yeah, do not call tomorrow.
For
that nonsense.
It is we have a specific line open
ideas.
For any narrative disruptors. Narrative disruptors. We've cleared all the West Coast and East Coast lines for you.
I'm barely interested in narrative affirming calls.
I'm not interested in narrative affirming calls at all.
I know.
If we had 30 calls stacked up who just wanted to tell me how wrong I was, it would be the happiest day of my life.
It would be a nightmare. We'd never get out of here.
It's true.
Oh, my God.
We would have the longest show.
First, the water regulation, and now an IQ call. Oh, my God.
You know what?
Maybe that's what I'll do. And just go till 7.
You were on the show when I did the 12-hour show, right, Michael? Oh, you weren't. Okay, so we did a 12-hour show. And it was me. I mean, I can't remember. I think old Matt, I think old Matt was here, and you know, at one point he went home, went to bed, I think. I'm not sure. But I feel like I could do a 24-hour show if I could just get enough callers to disagree with me. I feel like it would just fly by.
And everybody else would definitely, that would be our flight attendance moment. Just like, if you want to go on this reckless path, that's fine.
Oh, I have no problem doing shifts and then being here, at 3
like
in the morning, just looking
just
around.
Go to their
meeting. Fine with me.
I'll just be at a supermarket and be like, look, I'm really tired.
I'll just run to the bathroom and just like,
free Lula. All right, Sam's coming back to take another idiotic call. Lula Livre. I'm going to take a nap.
I mean, as long as I get to talk about, capitalism, I'll be happy.
That's what I figured. All right, folks, we got to take a quick break, head into the fun half. Just a reminder, this program relies on your support to exist. You can become a member for just pennies. I mean, it would be annoying to carry around that many pennies, but dimes. It would be an easy task to carry around the dimes per day that it would take to support this program. Head over to jointhemajorityreport.com. Become a member. We give you extra content next week. In fact, next week we're going to go on a break. It's going to be all new interviews, and we've got some really, really good ones. And Brendan is going to head into the deep archives and pick out stuff that he is interested in, stuff that like, how old were you when the deep, I'm talking deep archives. I'm talking Air America archives.
03, 04, 05, 06.
Oh 04 to like 07.
Ooh.
How old were you then? Were you like junior high?
Yeah. I was 12 years old.
He was Brendan like, hey, Paul, let's go to the ball game.
I was playing baseball.
Brendan was not allowed to listen to the radio. He was so young.
I actually did listen to a lot of radio when I was a kid.
All right.
But it was mostly like 10-10 wins and then like Steve Summers.
How did you not listen to Air America?
I didn't know what channel that was. I'm just AM radio in New Jersey.
I'm picturing them on
a car
ride.
It was, you knew 10-10 wins.
It's like the main state,
yeah, that's
AM station.
Right. Brendan's on like a car ride to go see a Mets game, and then all of a sudden you just accidentally flip it. You just hear like, well, it would stipulate that what the Bush administration is doing. And Brendan's just like, hey, Dad, geez, will you turn the channel? I want to go to the ball game.
I think that happens with a lot of our listeners right now, frankly. Anyways, members will have access to those deep archive shows that Brendan chooses for next week. So join themajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Today is Wednesday, last night Tuesday. Michael, what happened here?
What happened was the great Mark Blythe talked about decarbonizing the economy, the Green New Deal, Trump's dual populism pivot. A whole bunch of stuff, long block on Brazil and how it relates, the kind of synchronizing of a new effort to destroy the Brazilian pension system and Wall Street investment and how this has to do with a new deployment of violence in the favelas. In the post game, we told you exactly how to understand the Ilhan Omar scandal and the Amy Klobuchar scandal, or I don't want to say Ilhan Omar scandal. Ilhan Omar debate and freak out people are having. And also, Sam Harris, he has a very dumb idea about 2020. And I invite you to consider the possibility that if he knows this little about politics, maybe he's not quite as sharp on his.
What was his idea?
He's like, I think what the Democrats need is sort of like a younger Michael Bloomberg candidate. Which I love, as I pointed out in this segment. I mean, and we'll actually probably clip
like
this
Tom
one.
Steyer?
No, Tom Steyer would be too progressive for him. But what I like about it is that it's both not supported by any empirical data, and this is supposed to be like the empirical thing.
Howard Schultz?
Right. I mean, that actually would be like he's literally just not reading the headlines enough. He should be supporting
like
Howard
Schultz.
No, Howard Schultz would be the guy.
Well, he's 5 years too old.
He's
5 years too old. Well,
if he wants to be strategic about it, Joe Biden.
No.
Well,
Joe Biden's
not a billionaire.
Yeah, he's not a billionaire
or younger than Bloomberg. But Schultz is a billionaire who's younger than Bloomberg.
He's not. Well, as I pointed out, though, I didn't make the Schultz connection, but as I pointed out, it wouldn't be a proper Sam Harris segment if there wasn't at least a part of it that wasn't totally just imagined.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it would be like if he just said, I support Michael Bloomberg, or I like what Howard, I like the right. noises. It's like that would be too much in this realm.
Well,
so
no, the problem with that is experiment. That you could actually address what he was saying.
Right.
He says like Bloomberg, but impossible to pin down in terms of what I really want.
Oh, well, there's a whole, oh my God, there's a whole bunch of stuff in that. Anyways, it's patreon.com/TMBS. I will say just real quick, we're 13 away from our next goal, which is our first 2,000 patrons. So thanks, everybody, who's keeping the momentum going. And patrons know this, and it will be announced really soon, but the next TMBS live show is in L.A., April 20th, 420, with Waz, Anna Kasparian, and Nando Vila. Yes.
Okay. I hope you're flying in Jimmy Reefer Cake.
I can really Jamie. Tell you that that's not happening.
Well, it's a long way to go.
Oh, man. So this week on the Antifada, in our bonus released on Monday, Andy speaks with Murray Bookchin scholar Blair Taylor at Puerto Vallarta Bear Weekend about Murray Bookchin's political evolution from being an influential anarchist to something of a post-anarchist thinker. His Institute for Social Ecology that Blair currently runs, all kinds of good stuff. And then today, we just dropped our free episode featuring the always amazing Corey Pine, in which we talk to him about Silicon Valley, the book that he wrote, super good, Live, Work, 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 Die. We talk about the over-under on a big Bezos hog reveal, the dark powers that our new tech overlords hold over our lives, and how we must fight back against them.
And Brendan, how's your day?
Literary hangover. Go to patreon.com. We're talking about, I don't know.
Can you do the impression?
Of Matt?
Yeah.
The literary hangover. Crucible. All right.
You gotta take a quick break. Head into the fun
wait,
half.
What was the actual Patreon?
I don't know.
It's let me just say it because I feel bad.
Patreon.com/literary hangover?
Check the podcast description. All right, heading into the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.